Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the next edition to our monthly speaker series conference call with the Patika Wealth Management Group. This is John Patika Jr., and I'm joined with the senior member of our team, John Sr. And a recording of this call is going to be available on Spotify. We recently just got added to the Apple podcast app, so make sure to go on there and subscribe, and then you could actually see the rest of the recordings that we've had. I mean, we started doing this thing, matter of fact, when the pandemic started. So we got a pretty good lineup with some interesting guest speakers, but the purpose of this recording today is just Senior and I talking about what our team's thoughts are. Every time you turn on the news, there's a lot of negative headlines out there that some of it just might be a little overdone. So we thought it would be important to have a call like this where we could just kind of talk about what our thoughts are and where our stance is on everything. So
thanks, John. Yeah, just start off with the negative stuff. It's all you hear. It's getting people into a malaise, and I really hate it. A couple of them were, I saw a story about Amazon, so I kept the channel on between commercials. Amazon's cutting 10 million square feet of warehouse space. Well, all that's true, but you had to listen to the whole story and pay attention to the end where it says that's only 2% of Apple's overall warehouse space. All that is right-sizing. Companies do that all the time. There's another one on savings rate. You know, savings rate has been cut in half. It was 8%, now it's 4%. But they didn't tell you, usually it's much lower, sometimes negative. The reason it was 8% is because the government was printing money and giving them $1,500 and this stuff found its way. It was naturally going to come down. There was a story, it says, if a recession hits, unemployment will go up. And they did an entire segment on how people would cut back and what they wouldn't buy and sell. That kind of stuff needs to have a counterbalance. And I'm going to do some of that today. It's not this big rosy outlook, but it is a counter outlook to some of that. We're trying to put the facts out there and make informed decisions. So
yeah, I mean,
hopefully we help you out with that.
Since you're talking about inflation, let's talk about inflation because, I mean, just last night I went out and I paid $2.65 for a can of Diet Coke. I almost fell out of my chair. Thought the waitress was joking around with me. I'm not sure if that's a going rate for a can of Coke nowadays, but boy, that was pretty high. But Senior, you're going to talk a little bit about inflation and where this thing is going to end up.
And why it's important. I mean, people have to understand how big the consumer is to our economy. Consumer spending, that's us spending our money, is 70% of the United States economy. So you got to remember that. And all of these things that we talk about today, if you remember the underlying 70% of our economy is consumer spending, you'll see what I'm saying. And if the consumer changes their habits, it changes everything. To understand inflation, you got to look at what causes inflation. One of the things is we were importing deflation from China for 20 some years. Everything we had, they were government subsidized. They send stuff here dirt cheap. And we'd get, I don't know if you've ever seen some, you look at it and say, how the heck is that only a dollar? They put it, they manufacture in Shanghai, put it on a train, put it on a boat, send it to Los Angeles across the Pacific, get off the boat on a train, on a truck, and here I'm buying it for $2. How do they do it? Well, it's government subsidies. That's gone. So now we're importing inflation from China. India, we thought, might take their place. Vietnam, they're still commies. You know, you can't trust them. You can't put entire manufacturing outlets out there. So it's a tough situation, and that's part of why inflation is higher. Probably the overall reason, though, is we printed $5 trillion since COVID. At the same time, big chunks of our economy did well. The government used the economy being shut down as the reason to print $5 trillion. Well, that's not true. I mean, I never missed a day of work. Lawyers and people didn't miss a day of work. The people that missed were restaurants and things like that, more visible, but not the biggest part of the economy. So now you print $5 trillion and other companies are doing really well. And so that accelerated the $5 trillion into more inflation. Fossil fuels. The administration It's not a political statement. It's a factual statement. They did a complete 180-degree change in policy and attitude. Attitude is the big thing toward the industry. Fuel costs is gas and diesel has a lot of legs. It, you know, carries everything. Right now, we're 97% capacity in our refineries. They've closed about 3 million barrels of capacity in their refineries. Normally, when the profit margins are this huge in the refineries, they'll open them up. They shuttered 3 million barrels, like I said. So, but they're not doing that now because they're afraid to, and they're not doing it. And who's going to build a new refinery? It takes 10 or 15 years to break even, costs billions and billions to build these. And then who knows what happens in 10 or 15 years when you start making money. In fact, there's a company, I can't think of the name of the company. They own a refinery. They're closing it next year because they pledged to have a greener footprint. I hope they sell it to somebody who's willing to make money. But these are the kind of things that are going on. And as far as policy goes, the EPA rescinded all 31 refineries who got waivers from the biofuel blending mandates. So they all got waivers in 2018 and they waived them this year, meaning about an extra 20 cents a gallon because you got to add these biofuels in. It all doesn't make sense. And if you want to empty the strategic reserve, go ahead. You can't get it refined. It doesn't matter. That's the fuel issue. Who's going to build a refinery?
Well, what about food? I mean, food is just skyrocketing. And obviously, what's going on in Ukraine, is that getting any better? What are your thoughts on food?
Well, food's, the cost of diesel is a big deal in food. You've got your farm equipment and planting and delivery and all that. And the cost of humans has gone up. We're going to see a lot in the way of robots. You see that now. It's just stunning. They have robots milking cows and actually picking strawberries, and they have GPS type autonomous tractors getting the harvesting the wheat. It's amazing what's going on there, and that's what they're doing because the cost of humans is so much. But in a lot of cases, the cure for high prices is high prices. That saying's been around forever. High prices cure high prices. And if you want to look at an example, look at lumber. Lumber's always, there's always a bandwidth for trading. But it was $400 a thousand board feet. And then it went to $1,300 and then $1,600. And now it's back down to $600, I think it was last I saw, for a thousand board feet. All those sawmills are backing up and laying off now. So high prices, those guys didn't have any trouble cutting down trees. And that's what you need. But the fossil fuel industry is not having the same luck.
Well, I tell you what, with the food stuff, you know, when we go out to dinner and me and Laura take the kids out, I make sure that they finish their plates, they clean their plate up, because that's an expensive food they leave behind.
Sure.
The other thing, too, is supply chains. And, I know there has been some really interesting things that Amazon and Walmart was doing with ships and getting their own cargo ships. But where do you see the supply chains at this point?
I think that China was shut down for 2 months. That really hurt the supply chain. It might have helped the Port of Los Angeles catch up on unloading boats that are out sitting out in the sea. But that's going to start bringing down the supply chain. But I think more important than people's buying habits, they're going to adjust to their budgets and their availability of things that they normally buy. You see people not buying, maybe they don't buy the $70,000 F-150 pickup truck. Maybe they buy a $40,000, and maybe they hold on to their used car a little longer. You already see things like the used car market is settling in. There's so many apartments being built now that at some point that's going to neutralize a little bit. So I don't think that inflation goes away. I think it starts to level out in a lot of areas. And in the areas that they're going to really struggle, I think, is food and things like the fuel. You know, you take an example of food. In my life's experience, I remember way back early in my career, the cocoa bean I don't know what it was, a blight or something. So Hershey's doubled the price of the chocolate bar. And I remember that was headline news, doubled the price. And then as it played out, they got back to normal price, but Hershey's never cut the price of that bar back. You see that all the time in coffee, in the coffee blight in Colombia, or they'll have a flood or a drought, and they jack up the price of coffee and it never goes back. What I'm seeing now, and I'm always looking for investment opportunities, and that's what I'm talking about here today. How about when you take, a pound of bacon is 14 ounces? That's never going back. Cereal, that the packaging is never going back. My ice cream sandwich last night from Publix, that thing is so small, how many ounces it is. That'll never go back, but the prices will always stay up when the cost of the raw material comes down. So there's some opportunities in these companies that are able to get away with selling products at the same price, smaller products. They will do okay when things moderate. Their profit margins will be gigantic. You know, my Apple's one I always talk about. You got to buy companies that can raise their price and get away with it. My wife dropped her Apple phone, got a cracked glass, goes right to the Apple store. Didn't think about Samsung or any of that. And they sell her the whatever it was, two or three notches up, more money. They can get away with doing that because that's just what you do. So some people can't get away. Target couldn't get away with raising the price of basic goods. They had to eat a lot of that, and their stock paid for it. Walmart did the same thing. Their stock paid for it. So we're looking for companies that, and we'll talk a little more about that later, but companies that can overcome this inflation. And again, I think it's not going to go to 12 or 13%. I think it's going to level off in here, and a lot of the supply chain issues will be settled.
Well, God forbid if the ice cream sandwiches don't get back to the normal size, Senior. I can never hear the end of it here.
I think I'm going to shrink.
So that was a lot of the negatives, and this call was supposed to be, I let off, and so there are some positives in this market. So we're going to talk a little bit about some positives. Positives, Senior, what are you seeing right now?
Well, look, why are we still in the market if all of those things that I said are true? Well, you talk about unemployment is 3.6, right? 1.9 jobs for every job seeker. That may not be great for inflation at this time, but maybe it leads to a mild recession. But don't forget, people never talk about the baby boom generation. There's 10,000 people a day that are turning 65. And it's been going on for 7 or 8 years and will continue on for another, I think, 13 years. That's the baby boom generation turning 65. Well, look, they may not be getting out of the workforce when they turn 65, but they are getting out. And so that's going to help a lot for all this robotics and all these automation that's coming into the industries. So I think most recessions, and I always talk about the 70s and 80s where I cut my teeth. I mean, my goodness, there was high inflation, but the unemployment was so high. And you adjusted your buying habits to nothing because either you didn't have a job or your dad or your uncle, your neighbors, you knew people that didn't have work. You worried about layoffs. There was a lot more blue-collar jobs back then. And so people didn't buy anything. They clammed up. Right now, people are still buying because the unemployment is so low. And even if it goes up a little bit, and maybe a stupid example, but so instead of going to Ruth's Chris Steakhouse, they go to Pizza Hut. But they're still spending, and there's a winner and there's a loser. The pizza guy won, the steak guy lost. And so when the money's not flowing great, people are feeling a little less healthy than they did last year, they're still spending money. And that means a mild recession at best, not no recession. Another is like the savings rate. It's 4%. There's still a cushion out there of people with money. You get through some things when you have a little bit of money in the bank and you're not behind on your credit cards. China, again, I talked about, they pretty much started opening. They've been closed for a couple of months. I think Shanghai sold one car in April. they normally sell over 20,000, and that's going to open up commerce. It's going to open up their factories. Another point, the market's already corrected a lot. The S&P 500, the forward PE is about 16 times now. That's 30% less than it was. You can argue all these finer points, but the reality is the NASDAQ's down like 25%. I think the Dow's 8 or 9%. The S&P's, I think, 12, somewhere in there. The market has already pulled back. And then another underestimated thing is the stock buybacks. There's going to be a world record year. It's over $1 trillion of stock buybacks. And so what they do now, that provides for a floor under the stock market. The companies will give their money to whatever, Goldman Sachs, and they'll say, go ahead and buy whenever. And Apple's got a couple hundred billion in there. Amazon, 80 billion. And so all of a sudden, this stock gets to a point and they start buying. They buy out all the sellers. And so the next thing you know, there's like a floor there and all the sellers are gone and you have nothing but buyers left. So big, strong, high intensity balance sheet companies that can do this, we like those companies and we think you can make money because those buybacks are very, very effective this year.
Yeah, and it wasn't even just the buybacks too, and dividends too, I think had a record last year, over $60 billion, and on pace for that again. But you know, there is a lot of cash that's floating around the system. We talk about it all the time. I mean, just last week there's about $44 billion extra dollars that were added to money markets, for a total of about $4.5 trillion in money market funds. Putting that in perspective, back in May 2020, it was about $4.8 trillion. So we're just about almost there. And with the $5 trillion of COVID stimulus money out there, there's just so much flushing around that we're big followers of Milton Friedman. He always says that you want to find inflation, you want to look at the money, find the money, and you know, look at the M2 money supply, which is basically, you know, cash, cash equivalents, checking accounts. And since the pandemic started, we've got 40% more M2 cash in the system. And that's just gigantic. And to put that into perspective, we have one other economist that we really like to follow. And he put it in real simple terms. And he says, you know, compares it to an apple orchard. And he's like, you got $10 in the economy chasing 10 apples. You know, in a normal economy, that's a $1 an apple. Well, you've got 40% more cash in the system. I mean, there's $14 chasing 10 apples. It's $1.40 an apple. Well, with the supply chains and bottlenecks and China being shut down, you're probably operating at about 5 apples, which makes it $2.80 an apple. That's where we're at today as far as peak inflation. Soon it's going to smooth itself out. We'll get back to full capacity of the supply chains, you know, at 10, but when there's 40% more cash in the system, it's not going to be $1 an apple anymore. It's $1.40. So we think that's going to be seen here until they can stop printing all of the money. So, Senior, I'm going to turn it back to you here and talk a little bit about politics.
Well, before I get to that, and I guess it's kind of politics, don't forget the Ukraine war will be over at some point. Yeah, it's a horrible thing. That country's been destroyed, and it will be rebuilt. I don't know how many hundred billion that's going to cost, and we'll be part of that. It'll move money around. NATO's going to have to increase their defense spending. When NATO sees how Russia handled this, they're afraid for the first time in a long time. And I think, what is it, 3% of their GDP's got to be spent on defense, and they weren't doing it. We're down to just a few defense contractors. So that's some spending. You talk about politics, John. I mean, we think, like most people, that the Republicans will at least take over the House, maybe more, but just let's just say the House. And what does that mean to the market? You know, it means that there's no big spending bills probably going to happen. If it doesn't happen before August, it's not going to happen. And then there's no tax increases. I don't know if everybody knows that the Trump tax cuts of 2016, they expire 10 years, 2026. So it looks like if the Republicans stay the House, they're not going to cancel the Trump tax cuts, which businesses really like. So they'll expire naturally in 26, or they'll be extended. Basically, what you'll get from the politics is less new government entitlements, smaller government, that kind of thing, which is, you know, the markets and the businesses like consistency. They don't like when they don't know what's around the corner. I talked about refineries. How the heck do you build something that you get even in 15 years when 15 years from now, who knows if they're selling cars? It's just not going to happen. So you got to get through this period.
As I know we're getting close to the end of our call here, but do you have any final thoughts before we close out?
What keeps you awake at night? I keep talking about the refineries, but you know, that's a real deal. If you're at 97% capacity and you can't bring those shuttered ones back online overnight, what if there's a fire? What if there's a hack? What if there's something goes wrong on the refineries? You're talking about gasoline prices very high. Now, my whole life, there's always been something. You know, there's always worried about something. It used to be thermonuclear war. That's one of the things that scare me. When things are working at capacity, if something goes wrong, my favorite old saying is, everything's fine as long as everything's fine. Well, everything's fine right now. We can live with this price. We can get by. But boy, something goes wrong there. Companies that we look at all these things, not as a gossip column, we look at these things as how do you make money for your clients? You know, so we're looking hard right now at some of the defense contractors. Just know that there's more money going in and under that simple premise. We're looking at some of the grid companies. Electric cars are a real thing. It's coming. How long it takes, I don't know. But the grid has got to be not only hardened, the grid's got to be expanded. Some of those companies will do really well. And then some food sellers, a little bit of a surprise there. But like I said before, once you raise the price, cut the sizes and all that, that's going to stick. And at some point, the raw material prices go back down. And that's when these guys make a ton of money. So basically, we're always looking for that. We're never going to get out there and play the, our thing isn't the snowflakes and the Pelotons and things like that. We want to buy stuff in case we're wrong or in case there's a big shock to the system, that the company is going to survive and get through that crisis and come out stronger because there's less competitors. So basically, that's what we do all the time. We look for value and what's ahead of us. And back to the media making exaggerations. Most of the time, you know, they're reporting what has happened in the last month or the last 3 months. That's not how you make money in a stock market, what happened last month. You got to try to figure out what's going forward. And I think we do a pretty good job at that. And we're going to continue to try.
Yeah, absolutely. And that just about concludes our call. Our UBS Wealth Management Research Department puts out some really great pieces, and they also do some really great calls every month, too. If you'd like to have any of that, feel free to reach out to myself or James. We'll be able to get you those issues. Some of the live streams are recorded, too, and they got some pretty smart people on those calls. If there's anything at all that you would like to talk about further after this call, feel free to reach out to us. We're here. This is what we do. And we love helping people out to calm fears. I feel like a psychiatrist half the time on sifting through a lot of the stuff that the media has put out and debunking it. But it's our job and this is what we love to do. So we're here for you. And we hope everyone stays safe. And until next time, we'll talk to you soon.